next speaker is the only journalist held in Guantanamo. Sami El-Haj had a unique position to record everything that he saw and everything that he and his colleagues suffered. He was released in 2008, and ever since then, he's been completely tireless in traveling to meet all the former prisoners, and I think he's met 80% of the 800 who were originally held there. And he spent this time documenting their stories, and like Mirza, crisscrossing the world, talking to people, and showing through his journalistic work what Guantanamo was like. So thank you, Sam.
In the name of Allah, most compassionate, most merciful, I bid you a good evening. And
على غوانتانامو وبس 120 شهر.
I say that 10 years of Guantanamo is an equivalent of 120 months.
معنا ليس لمعتقلين غوانتانامو فحسب بل للأسر التي ينتمون إليها.
And this is not just something that affects those people who are held in Guantanamo, rather the families of those who remain waiting for their loved ones.
معتقل غوانتانامو يتفق الجميع أنهم معتقل خارج على القانون.
It is evident and clear and agreed upon that everyone held in Guantanamo is held outside of the rule of law.
حاول الجميع لإغلاق غوانتانامو.
Everyone has tried to have Guantanamo closed.
لإنهاء هذه المأساة.
To put an end to this to this difficulty.
بعد خروجي من غوانتانامو،
after I was released from Guantanamo،
زرت كثير من المعتقلين.
I visited many of the former Guantanamo prisoners.
ومعاناتهم ما زالت متواصلة.
And their status and their situation still remains as it was.
القصص كثيرة.
There are many stories.
قد لا يسع الوقت لذكرها.
That I'm not able to due to the constraints of time to discuss.
لكن كل الذي أود أن أقوله في هذه الليلة.
But all that I would like to say this evening.
نحن لدينا مبادرة لإنهاء هذه المأساة.
We have an intention to or an ability to stop all of these difficulties and hardships.
سنقدم مناشدة لرئيس دولة قطر.
That we want to put to the leader of the state of Qatar.
لاستضافة المعتقلين اليمنيين.
To ask for the to accept the Guantanamo prisoners of Yemeni origin.
وهم يمثلون أكثر من 50% من المعتقلين الموجودين في غوانتانامو.
Who represent over 50% of the Guantanamo prisoners.
وأيضا نريد أن نخاطب الحكومة التونسية لإعادة التونسيين.
And we also would ask the new Tunisian government. To call for the return of the Tunisian prisoners.
ونحن سعداء لأن الربيع العربي قد أتى بالرئيس التونسي الجديد الذي وقف 5 وقفات تضامنية مع معتقلين غوانتانامو.
And we are very happy to see that the new leader of the Tunisian government has stood with the Guantanamo prisoners and asked for the return of the 5 Tunisians who are still there.
من خلال هذه المبادرة التي سنحملها لدولة قطر.
During this period that we are asking the state of Qatar to act.
نعتقد أننا نستطيع أن نعيد بعض الإخوة الذين قضوا هذه السنوات في غوانتانامو.
We believe that we are able to return some of the prisoners who spent all of these years in Guantanamo.
إذا وفقنا,
if it's agreed,
سيعود عدنان الشرعبي.
That Adnan al-Sharabi is returned.
سيرى ابنه الذي بلغ 9 سنوات ولم يراه من قبل.
Who would see for the first time in his life his son who has reached the age of 10 years old who he's never seen before.
وقد يعود أيضا محمد الصلاحي الموريتاني.
And someone like Mohammed al-Salahi from Mauritania.
سيعود إلى أسرته. ويعود إلى أمه
so that he can return to his family and to his mother
التي فقدت بصرها بكاء وحزنا على ابنها الذي أخذ منها من موريتانيا
who lost her sight through sorrow and sadness and because of the son who was taken from in front of her.
نحن نأمل دعمكم في هذه المبادرة.
We hope that you would take part in this with us.
ونأمل من كل الشرفاء الموجودين هنا.
And we hope that from all of the people here.
والذين معنا أيضا ولم يحضروا اليوم.
And even those of us who are with us in heart but not in presence.
لإنهاء هذه المأساة.
To bring an end to these to this issue.
شكرا لكم جزيلا.
Thank you very much.
Earlier on, that within these tragedies, there are the tragedies of all these families. And so before Clive speaks, I'm going to read to you a very short record of a letter and a conversation that I had with Shaka's wife more than 2 years ago. This is what she said. Once a long time ago, my husband wrote this letter to me from Guantanamo. This is what it said. I am dying here every day, mentally and physically. This is happening to all of us. We have been ignored, locked up in the middle of the ocean for years. Rather than humiliate myself, having to beg for water, I would rather hurry up the process that's going to happen anyway. I would like to die quietly by myself. I was once 250 pounds, and I dropped to 150 pounds in the first hunger strike. I want to make it easy on everyone. I want no feeding, no forced tubes, no help, no intensive assisted feeding. And this is my legal right. The British government refuses to help me. What is the point of my wife being British? I thought Britain stood for justice, but they abandoned us. People who have lived in Britain for years and who have British wives and children. I hold the British government responsible for my death, as I do the Americans. Shaka's wife went on to say, my own husband wrote this. Why don't they help him? Why have the others come back and not him? Can you tell me? Why can no one tell me? I can't believe my own husband wrote that letter about wanting to die. He's not like that. He's big and he's strong and he's talking and always talking to everyone, making friends with everyone. People always love him. You couldn't not love him. You know, I prayed when I went on the Hajj to let me marry a man in white robes and a scarf like those I saw. And my prayer was answered back home in Battersea. A young man from Medina came into the mosque and spoke to my mother. I liked him when I saw him, though I did think at first he was just too big. But he was too kind to me for me not to love him. You know, now I have dreams. I hear voices, bad voices in my head, and they tell me that he's dead or that he's divorced me. I try to tell them to go away, but they come back. Tell me they aren't true, are they? What's happening to me? Do you know, he's been away from me in Guantanamo longer than we were together, 8 years. My youngest boy, you never saw his dad. He doesn't even know what a dad is.
Thank you very much. And look, I apologize for running out a minute ago. I had to do a debate on the BBC with David Rifkin. I was in law school with him in New York many, many years ago, and he hasn't got any more sensible in the last 20 years, I'm telling you. And talking about folly, that's what Guantanamo Bay is all about, isn't it? It's, you know, the idea when you go down there that for every single prisoner, there are 17 soldiers to protect us from them, 17 for each one. And, you know, for every prisoner, we spend $800,000 a year. You know, just imagine how many schools you could have for that. And then, as Michael said, 89 of the 171 people have been cleared for release. And you know what Rifkin just said on the radio? He said, well, they've been cleared for release, but who knows what they'll do if we do release them, so we'd better just keep them. You know, what's the point of clearing people for release? And I did point out to him that all these vicious, dangerous people in there, and I'm looking at some of them, I'm sitting next to some of them. I don't think, and Mosen will correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think these horrendous criminals have had a traffic ticket since they came back to England. I may be wrong on that. If it's true, then I plead guilty to being vastly worse criminal than they are, because I'm afraid I did just the other day. And, you know, this is, it's stunning, but what got me so angry in the very beginning of this was the sheer hypocrisy of it. When I first saw, and I'm American as well, I'm half British, so I get to apologize for everybody. But, you know, when I first saw that my country was saying we stand for the rule of law and democracy, and what are we going to do? We're going to set up a prison in Cuba, for goodness sake, which is a place we've said doesn't have any of that. And what we're going to do there is we're going to deny people any rule of law or anything. And then you go down there, and the first time I went down there in 2004 and met Mosen, you know, you see the motto of Guantanamo, and it says, honor bound to defend freedom. And, you know, I thought, wow, these people have got a sense of humor. And, you know, we were going, I've told the story, these guys know, but it just made me laugh so much. We went into McDonald's, and I had my mind there, this colonel, a very nice chap, because we were considered very dangerous. We were the lawyers. And I was told by one of the guards that they'd been told that we were the enemy. And so you had to have a mind there everywhere you went. And I had this colonel, and we walk into McDonald's, and there's this junior soldier salutes him and says, honor bound, sir. And he salutes back and says, to defend freedom, soldier. And I laughed. I thought it was a joke. I thought it was for my benefit. And they weren't amused. And they thought I was being quite rude. And then you drive down to the camps, and they have a little sign as you drive down to the camps, and it says on the sign, the value of the weak, and it said, compassion. And this was the value of the folk who were just sort of holding Muslim in solitary confinement, you know, abusing my friend Sammy here. And there is no sense of reality in Guantanamo, no sense. And there's no common sense. And it's a nightmare, not just for everyone involved in it, but it's a nightmare for America too, isn't it? When I first went there, there was a CIA guy who said that he thought that for every prisoner we had held in Guantanamo, we had inspired 10 people to hate America so much they'd want to come and do us harm. That was in 2004. And I think there's probably a lot of truth to that. And yet, years later, how many more people we inspired to hate us, and how much more dangerous has that whole place made us. So my good friend, and I think I use that slightly loosely, David Rifkin, speaking on behalf of the American government today, is saying that we want to keep it open forever, because we need it to detain the evil people like sitting up here with me. I mean, it's just so sad and so wrong. But I did want to talk about Shaka, because we have these anniversaries. And when I saw Shaka in November, you know, that was when he just had his 10th anniversary, actually, of first being detained in Afghanistan. It was on November the 24th. He was first detained by the Americans on Christmas Eve, on the 24th of December. He was detained in Bagram, and I think that's an important anniversary because Shaka was abused horribly in Bagram. He was one of the first five people to get there. And the things that happened to him were absolutely ghastly. And one thing I suspect we'll all hear tomorrow is the result of, you know, whether they're going to have criminal prosecutions for certain complicity by the British in some of those abuses. Well, look, Shakarama, there's no question but that there needs to be a full criminal investigation into what happened to him in Bagram. Then he went to Kandahar, and it wasn't until Valentine's Day of 2002 that he ended up in Guantanamo Bay. And that's a real anniversary in my mind, because I had a 3.5-year-old boy called Wilfred. And, you know, I was a bit of a late starter myself, my wife and I, and we're real amateurs. But, you know, as Michael said, you know, what greater joy is there? And if you're not very careful, I shall inflict pictures of Wilfred on you. If I only had a PowerPoint, I'd be showing him right now. And that poor child is shown all over the world to people just because I'm obnoxious and proud of my little boy. It's been such an experience in 3.5 years. And you know that, and many of you are much wiser than I am on that. But the idea that on Valentine's Day 2002, Jack is banged up in Guantanamo, and that's the very day that his child is born, and he's never seen his child in 10 years. The idea of my having missed 3.5 years of Wilfred, just compare that to Shaka and 10 years of his child. It's just so sad. And at the same time, everyone wants to say in America that Guantanamo is getting better. And I heard some chap on the radio, a doctor who was unwilling to give his name. I suppose we're all a bit ashamed of being involved in this. And he was saying that the prisoners in Guantanamo Bay get as good medical care as he would have made sure his family got. Well, he ought to be struck off, frankly, because the quality of medical care, as these guys would tell you better than anyone, is unfathomably bad. And I have right here a bit of paper that's unclassified, because I had to go through the whole classification process, in which Shaka has listed 18 ways in which his body is falling apart. And he talks about the kidney pain he got from being beaten up, and he talks about his prostate, he talks about you know, his eyesight going, and so on and so forth. And he talks about, for example, his fingernails. Well, I saw his fingernails, and, you know, I held them, in fact, and they were orange, and his fingernails were falling apart, and as I put my fingernail into his, you could actually crumble it. It was horrifying. And, you know, this is clearly a bacteria that's destroying his fingers, and that's meant to be okay. I mean, that's the least of his worries, frankly, compared to all the other things he's going through. But the concept that it's okay and he's getting good health care merely re-emphasizes the fact that the Americans need an NHS. But then they go on to say the conditions are wonderful in Guantanamo Bay too. And Shaka has now been in solitary isolation for, I think, probably longer than any other prisoner in Guantanamo. And he's now in Camp 5, Echo Block, which is their punishment area, where they're in solitary confinement in a place that looks a bit like your toilet, probably. Except their toilet's not really there, they just have a hole in the ground. And he's been held there for months and months and months. And you know, they talk about how civilized and wonderful our whole system is. I've been to most death rows in America. I've spent many, many years working on death row. And I can tell you without fear of contradiction that the conditions in Guantanamo Bay are worse than any death row I've ever been to. And this is for someone who's committed no crime, who's never going to be convicted of committing a crime, who's been cleared for release for 4 years, and they have the gall to say conditions are okay. They're not, they're horrible. And so we remember Shaka, and we remember our obligation to him. We also remember many of the other prisoners, and I think it's very important to have their stories out there. And that's our obligation in terms of, you know, Ahmed Belbacha, who lived down in Bournemouth for a while, and actually John Prescott gave him a tip one time because he was working in a hotel and old Two Jags thought he'd done quite a good job cleaning up the room at the Labour Party conference and so gave him a tip. And we did approach Prescott to see if he would act as an ex-friend for Ahmed and get him back to Britain, but he never replied. But, you know, we've got to remember all of these people who are left in Guantanamo Bay and who we need to get out of there. We also need to understand a bit about why Fogarty being released was Shaka. It was originally that the US wanted to send him to Saudi Arabia, and they wanted to do that because we have the First Amendment in America. We believe in free speech as long as it's not one of these people. And so what we wanted to do was make damn sure that we didn't send Shaka back to Britain, where he would give irritating interviews in the media about what's really going on in Guantanamo Bay. And we wanted to send him to Saudi Arabia so they could gag him. Now, that's not happened, thankfully. But now the reason that he's not being released is because of the idiotic laws that David Rifkin was just defending on the radio. He actually quoted the NDAA. And, you know, what that says is just unfathomable. We've now passed a law that identifies 171 people and says that those people have to be held until the Secretary of Defense personally, Leon Panetta, personally signs something saying, I promise that Shaka Rana won't commit a crime in the future. And what's more, I promise that Britain's not a failing state facing revolution imminently, which probably sadly is not. But he also has to promise that that British intelligence services will share with the Americans everything that they know about Shaka's associates. Well, I'm proud to say that I'm one of Shaka's associates, and so I take it that means the Brits have to share the wiretaps that are doubtless on my email, which my wife and I do periodically send polite messages to the intelligence services apologizing for being so boring. But, you know, these are the rules that prevent the United States right now, in theory, from releasing folks. But as Michael said, it's only in theory. In practice, if they had the moral courage to do it, they could do it. And they're only going to get that moral courage if we do our job. And I'm here to say that I don't feel I have done my job for the last few years. And I think there are other people who I want to recognize, frankly, right here, with reprieve, Corey and Tara and Courtney, who have been going to Guantanamo much more than I have. And they've been doing their job much better than I have, I think, until recently. And I think we need to recommit all of ourselves to doing much, much more to raise this issue and to raise the plight of these people. Because until the US politicians get enough heat from the other side, they're not going to set people free. Look, I'll tell you, Samuel Hajj was not set free because of any court of law. He was set free because of the court of public opinion. And one of my many regrets in life is Sam is free. Really irritating. He was such a great client to have in Guantanamo. I hate to say this, Sandy, but I really miss you being in prison. Sandy did so much good. And I remember telling the American military, they didn't like this, but I said, you people are truly insane. Because you won't let journalists from any country or any place in the world come in here to talk to prisoners. You won't let the BBC in, you won't let American people in. And you know the people you most hate? You hate those Al Jazeera people, and you let them have a journalist in Guantanamo who's able to interview anyone he wants and write whatever reports he writes. And I used to so enjoy coming and getting Sammy's latest set of reports and then trying to get them through the censors and so we could publish them on Al Jazeera. And it was that power that got people out of Guantanamo. It wasn't the lawyers, it was that power of the stories, the court of public opinion. Now, I don't want to be all negative, because frankly, Michael said a bit about how tough some of these things are. I don't think for me it's tough at all. I've had a few entertaining moments when they try to bang me out. But frankly, they give you some good stories, particularly when with Shaka, they tried to bang me up for supposedly smuggling underpants and Speedo swimming trunks into it. I got this letter, I thought, my goodness, this is April Fool's Day, I can't believe these people. And I wrote back to him saying, I'm going to give you some free legal advice that if you think Shaka has got Speedo swimming trunks and you're afraid of him swimming, the only place he can swim is in his toilet. So all you have to do is put a little sign above it saying, we don't piss in your swimming pool, so please don't swim in our toilet. And that should solve the problem. By and large, our job has been a huge privilege. And I don't think for one second that it's been hard on me. It hasn't. It's been wonderful. Some of the wonderful things has been some of the people up here who I've got to meet. And I wouldn't have met Sammy, I wouldn't have met Muslim, I wouldn't have met Omar, I wouldn't have you know, I wouldn't have had Bisha give me free meals whenever I turn around. I wouldn't have met all these folk here, and I'm immensely grateful for that. And I view the work, as they call it, I don't think it is work, but the work, they call it, of representing these people is a great privilege and a great joy. And I don't think that that is difficult in the least. And I also don't think that we should be negative about this. I remember as, I'll tell you a little story, when Michael and Joe Margulis and I first filed this litigation, there were all these calls, you know, will you come on television? And, you know, I was younger and even more stupid, and they knew better, and they said no. And so Joe said, Joe's normally as much of a media whore as I am, but he said, why don't you do it, Clive? And I should have been suspicious, because I should have known something was afoot. I said, fine, I'll go do it. So I went on this television channel, and they accused me of being a traitor 13 times in 5 minutes. And indeed, I did get some fantastic messages on my answering machine that night. But back then, in February 2002, the whole world was against us. And, you know, you're the most powerful person on earth, well, it's George Bush. All these people in Britain who think that now they're on our side, they weren't on our side then. I'll tell you, the media wouldn't do anything back then. No one would do anything positive back then. Of course, there were people in Islamic countries, perhaps, who saw what was really going on, but very, very few people in the West. And we were up against the most powerful person on earth, and he lost. He's lost. And if you took a poll today around the world, outside America, 90% of the world would be on our side on the Guantanamo issue. That is astounding. And we must never, never lose sight of that, because what that shows is what an American woman once said, which when asked if a small group of people can change the world, the response was, that's the only way it ever has happened. Well, that's actually not true. Big groups of people have too. But we can make that change, and we must never forget it. A little more difficult in America, and that's where we've got a big challenge, and we haven't won the battle there, but we will. And I guarantee you, when the history books are written, we don't say that burning witches at the stake was a great idea. I can guarantee you there's some other things the history books will say, and they won't say that Guantanamo Bay was a good idea. We're going to win this battle. It's just a matter of when. And that's defined entirely by how much we do. And what we've got to do is everyone look to themselves about their own talent and how their talent can be used to help, but also look for unlikely allies. You know, one thing I'll say, there are some police officers in the Metropolitan Police who are our allies. They are horrified by what's been going on in the torture of people, and they really want to get around prosecuting a few of these guys. Now, whether they prevail or not, we'll find out tomorrow. But in my opinion, we have some very unlikely allies, and the Metropolitan Police, I never thought they'd be coming down to my house for any reason other than to arrest me. And then, you know, I just came from Parliament this afternoon. I came right here from there, where I was meeting with a Tory MP who wants to do something about what he views as the shocking discrimination and the shocking failure to acknowledge people like Mozambique. You know, he thinks that some of the greatest advocates for all of us in reconciliation are not your sort of middle-of-the-road, right-wing, middle-of-the-road people, but it's people like Mozambique, who there's a whole bunch of tabloids out there say we should lock him up, but who's someone who you know and I know and Lord Bingham knows when he met him. He said, I didn't realize there were people like you in Guantanamo. That can really make a difference. And if a Tory MP wants to reach out to Mosin, I think that's wonderful. And we've got to try and take those allies where we find them and empower them. So don't, for goodness, go away, for goodness sake, go away from tonight thinking it's all bloom and doom. It's not. We're going to win. There's no question about that we're going to win. It's just a matter of how long it takes, and that's going to be defined entirely by what you do. And if you work incredibly hard with us, I can guarantee you that you'll get into purgatory. Thank you.
Since he was released in December 2007. So without more ado, thank you.
It's very difficult to speak in a panel where you have people like Glyn and Gareth and Mark Grattan and everyone else, and also very good speakers, and they can explain better than, you know, what was happening, and they've done so much to make Guantanamo what it is. But just for a few words, it's like not Guantanamo has been open not 1 year, not 2 years, not 3 years, it has been open for 10 years. A decade, and to remember those people who are there locked up in those prisons, they were picked up in suspicious circumstances, and then not being able for 10 years to answer back or to have there to listen to what they have to say. Only 6 cases have been brought to court within 10 years, a decade. And it is it's very sad that in our lifetime that we should be witnesses to such practices. That people, as you saw in the film, have died inside Guantanamo, young people who might, one of them was even cleared for release before he died. There are about 80 people, 79 people inside Guantanamo now, cleared for release since the days of Bush. But the only reason that many people are still locked up in Guantanamo is political. It's political fighting inside the United States. And to realize that, as I say, you know, those people are being tortured, deprived of many of their normal rights and norms. It's very, very sad that in our time that this should continue, and it is an embarrassment and shame on all of us that this, in this time, should be happening. But thank you very much.
Represented by its head, Masoud Sharjah.
Guantanamo Justice Center. No, I'm saying just Guantanamo Justice Center too is involved in it, not just a joke.
Anyway, we've been talking about throughout the evening of people and organizations that were there from the very start. In the very first round of campaigning, there was Mirzem's father, and constantly at his side, as well as Horrid Redgrave, was Masoud. So I asked Masoud to take the...
Thank you. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear brothers, sisters, campaigners, those who are standing for justice, I'm not going to take a lot of time because most of the things that needs to be said has already been said. But I was asked to sort of remember at the beginning what it was, and I think it's really important. I remember as it was almost yesterday when we all heard about Guantanamo, we saw those vivid photographs, you know, if you remember, you know, people being shackled, tied and bound to the bottom of the planes with the American flags hanging, and, you know, the barbaric sort of way that they were being moved. And I remember at the time thinking that, my God, we don't even do this to animals. You know, when we transport sheep and cattle, we actually care for their well-being while they're being transported across Europe or within the continent. What is this all about? And it was very clear, even at that time, that the issue was more than just arresting and holding these guys without trial, without any sort of court or in as has been said, a black hole from a legal perspective. But it was there to actually demonize them, dehumanize them, and actually show to the rest of the world that the United States not only is going to behave in this way, but it's actually proud of it and actually turning it
into some sort of patriotic sort of image. You know, and it did become, I mean, shortly after that you could see Americans actually having these photographs around, and it was a sign of how patriotic they are. That, you know, these acts of barbaric acts, behavior towards innocent people, became that sort of image. And indeed, you know, I remember very clearly, I was getting phone calls from people saying, don't you dare get involved in doing any campaign. These are actually terrorists. These are etc. These are Wahhabis. These are Salafis. These are terrorists. These are the ones who committed. There is no smoke without fire. And some people were actually even were worried to say this on the phone. They were actually coming, knocking at the door and saying, I wanted to say something to you, but I don't want to really say it on the phone. You shouldn't really get involved in this. And unfortunately, many of those were from the Muslim community, and even more so from Muslim community than others. And then, you know, I'm saying that particularly because I think we should remember those who immediately stood up. And Karen and Vanessa were among those who actually immediately took the burden on their shoulder and actually organized the Guantanamo Human Rights Commission, and tirelessly, you know, going around within Britain with Muslims there and indeed across the world. I remember traveling to the United States, we were all going, there were a number of lawyers from the Guantanamo detainees and some of the members of the family, and we were going to the States. I couldn't go with everybody else. I went the day after. And everybody had lawyers there to actually make sure that we could actually get into the United States. And unfortunately, I didn't have that that support. When I got there, the immigration officer sort of looked at my British passport and said, what's the purpose of your visit? I said, I've come here to release the Guantanamo. You should have seen the shock on his face until I actually showed some of the documentation. But, you know, really, we need to recognize that. And also we need to recognize, even at that time, I did receive other phone calls. I received a phone call from Ahmad Qasim, who himself spent 11 years in Robben Island as a prisoner. And he phoned me and he said, make sure, and he actually said, make damn sure that you are going to stand and support not just those who are detained, but the families. Make sure they are not going to be demonized in the community. Make sure that you become their friends and create a whole network of support around them. And this is really important now as well. Because really, we've got many others, not just 171 who are in Guantanamo, but many others who are in a similar position. And you know, those who in this country have been put under control orders, etc., you know, imprisoned in their own house, that actually in some ways is much worse than being in actual prison. Many detainees have told me that in South Africa and elsewhere. We need to make sure that they are not demonized on top of that. We need to be there. But one other thing I want to sort of say, thank God, because of all the campaign that has gone out, no one else is going to be going to Guantanamo. That is actually a victory. And also it's a victory to see many of ex-detainees here. And, you know, the wonderful friendship that we have had since they have been released. If I'd known they were such a nice people, probably I would have worked harder to release them. But, you know, the reality is that we need to continue that campaign. But also I want to say a word of warning. The new policy of the United States is not just close Guantanamo because it was unacceptable. The new policy is that you don't arrest them anymore. You just target them and send a drone in and kill them. And kill their neighbors, kill their family, and kill their loved ones. And you know, the reality is that we don't even hear the names of those who are being targeted. We can't even campaign for them to be returned home.
because they're dead and gone, and we don't even know who they are. We need to campaign against that policy. And we need to make sure that those are not forgotten. And the reality is that the drones are killing, all the reports highlight, 75% of so-called innocent people. I would say 100% innocent people, because none of them have been found guilty in any courts of law. And we need to campaign on that. Let us take the momentum of this for two things. One, a commitment that we will make sure all 171 will be returned to their loved ones. And secondly, go with a vigorous campaign against this new policy of assassinating those who are no more guilty or less guilty than those who are in Guantanamo and are free now with us, among us. And that should be a promise. And let us rise up to that challenge. Thank you very much.
Whose names you won't know, but you will after. They've written very short poems in this incredibly wonderful book, which you can buy at the stall outside or in the Brockway room. Poems are going to be read by Abbas, who is himself a poet and a playwright, who's long been associated with Guantanamo. And these poems were brought out of Guantanamo by the lawyers, painstakingly over months declassified, and then translated by volunteers into English. And the three poets we're going to hear from are the Yemeni, Othman Abdul Rahman Mohammed, the Bahraini, Abdullah Majid Al-Nawami, and a Uyghur raised in Saudi called Sadiq Tekistani. Thank you, Abbas.
Good evening. These poems, like all the best poetry, speak of truth and beauty. There's also a performance, which is probably best left unsaid by me. I'm sorry, my brother. I am sorry, my brother. The shackles bind my hand, and I am circling the place where I sleep. I am sorry, my brother, that I cannot help the elderly, or the widow, or the little child. Do not weigh the death of a man as a sign of defeat. The only shame is in betraying your beliefs and failing stand by your ideals. My heart was wounded by the strangers. My heart was wounded by the strangers. Now, poetry has rolled up his sleeves, showing a long arm. Time passes. The hands of the clock deceive us. Time is precious and the minutes are limited. Do not blame the poet who comes to your land, inspired arranging rhymes. Oh, brother, who need not be named, I send you my gift of greetings. I send heavily falling rains. Don't the rocks tell you of the crimes committed in their midst? Doesn't Cuba, the vanquished, translate stories for you? You've been inside us for 3 years, and what have you gained? Boats of poetry on the sea, and a buried flame in a burning heart. Poets' words are the font of our power. His verse is a salve blessing, even if the pain. Even if the pain of the wound increases, there must be a remedy for it. Even if the days in prison endure, there must be a day when we will get out.